Well, that's enough to blow you away, isn't it? Isn't that great? I think all of our lives will be changed considerably from what Dave has brought to us. And I'm going to, a couple of minutes, we got a little fat guy from Brooklyn who's going to come down here and harangue you, give you some information, some learning and sharing experiences, which I think you will enjoy. Do you want to start now, or do you want a little short break? What do you want to do?
If you folks are ready, I'm ready.
Are you ready? We'll lay it on them.
I just want to share one thing with you all before I get into what I wanted to discuss, and that is that some years ago, when I first met Dave Hawkins, he was not the man he is today, and that I saw in him a very troubled human being who was crying out for help. And in looking at my brother, I recognized that he and I were on a somewhat collision course in meeting, as we all are on a collision course of sorts, and that somehow or another we were going to become closer brothers than we were at that moment. And Dave and I have interacted down through the years since his involvement with the course, and he donated the use of the hospital he spoke about, and we started an attitudinal healing center on Long Island, which was his doing, and I ultimately became the vice chairman of. And it's still in operation, and it's still being used by people who are searching for a better way, which is marvelous to be a part of, and certainly one of the things that I really enjoy. And it was just a willingness, as he suggested, that made it all come about. I remember him walking into my office some years ago and seeing him for the first time, and he was kind of hunched over and kind of really beat. And I said, golly, here's a man that is a doctor of medicine, psychiatrist, had the most fantastic credentials, and here he was looking for help from one of his brothers in starting into A Course in Miracles. And I played my part, just as we all play our parts. And it's just been a very, very beautiful development for me to see the change that he's made in his life. And having visited him about 2 months ago in Arizona, the thing that really came into my thoughts at that moment was, by gosh, he's really found it, this utopia that we all seem to be looking for. But what was so also important to me was that it was there all the time, and it is here all the time, so that all we need do is just recognize that our only function here as children of God is to be aware of it, and then everything else is taken care of. I just wanted to say those few words about Dave, and then I'll get into what I have kind of put together. And you'll forgive me if I glance at my notes every once in a while, because I didn't come out here to Michigan to really do this kind of program that I'm about to do, but it was so fascinating that I'll share it with you and do what I have in mind. June 10th, which was yesterday, is the 48th anniversary of a group of people called Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's been around 48 years, and of course the organization is doing what it does so well, and that is, of course, helping each other. And as Dan has said so many times, it's again a bridge, as we talked about last night, with Course in Miracles being a bridge. And I got to thinking about this yesterday, flying here from New York, and it struck me that here were three men coming from different homes, coming from different environments, and coming from different thought systems, different religions, different everything, just about as different as three men could be. And here we were practicing and sharing something called A Course in Miracles. And as I was flying here from New York, I said, okay, Spirit, you're telling me something, and I always listen for the guidance that I am handed by Spirit, and I'm always open to it. And my son had picked up a copy of the New York Post as we were getting on the plane to fly here to Detroit, and he was really interested in, I guess, the ball scores and what the teams that he follows were doing. And in that paper, as I started to read it just to see what Spirit was directing me to do, I picked up this article, which I'm going to read to you. And this article was in the Friday, June 10th, New York Post. And I'll read it, and then we'll discuss it, which is, I think, pertinent to what the Course in Miracles is all about. The headline reads, BizWiz dies in car crash as he becomes multimillionaire, which is a grabbing type of headline, obviously. It says, a computer executive died yesterday afternoon in the crash of his red Ferrari just hours after his company's successful entrance into the stock market made him a multimillionaire. Dennis Barnhart, 40, president and one of the founders of Eagle Computer Incorporated, was only blocks from his office in Los Gatos, California, when his car went out of control and plunged down a ravine, killing him. A passenger in Barnhart's car, Sheldon R. Coffey, age 40, was thrown from the car. Coffey, owner and president of Pacific States Yacht Company in San Rafael, was in stable condition yesterday in the intensive care unit at Valley West General Hospital in Los Gatos. Eagle stock was issued to the public for the first time yesterday at $13 a share. It was the third most active issue in the over-the-counter trading and closed at $15.50 after hitting a high of $17. Barnhart owned 592,433 shares of Eagle Computer following the public offering of 2,750,000 shares, making his stake worth about $9 million at the time of his death. Today, the National Association of Securities Dealers, the governing body of the over-the-counter market, withheld quotes on Eagle stock at the request of Hambrecht and Quist, the San Francisco-based investment firm that underwrote yesterday's Eagle offering. The last reported bid and asked on the stock was 15.25 to 15.75. Eagle makes small business and personal desktop computers, and it has grown by 100% each quarter since it was incorporated in May 1982. Reporting net sales of $17 million, and it goes on and on and on and on. And what it was bringing out, of course, was they were now wondering who would be Mr. Barnhart's replacement. And it occurred to me, as I read that, that what is this thing that we call death? And how does Course in Miracles deal with this? Was this man, Mr. Barnhart, such a terrible guy that just at the very moment of his seeming rise to the top, that anyone could just pull the rug out from under him and take it and snatch it all away out of his grasp? And what about Holy Spirit's part in all this? And what about Course in Miracle? How does that look at it? And it occurred to me that we had something that we could talk about and get into today on how the Course in Miracles deals with this kind of thing, and what is this thing that we are so frightened of called death. And I started thinking about it and thinking about it, and of course Dave so beautifully covered all of the aspects of the change and all of the aspects of what he's gone through and certainly what I've gone through. And I started thinking that what has really happened in my own life was that I've totally lost my fear of something called death, because there really is no death. And what I've really gotten from A Course in Miracles since 1975, when it first came into my consciousness, was that we are all fearful of something that we need have no fear of. Let's stop for a moment and recognize and ask ourselves the question, do we really feel that God, our Father, is indeed our Father? And if he is as beautiful and as loving and as gracious as we go around saying he is, then what is this fear we're walking around with? If we are to return to our Father at any given point, and that will only happen, so says Course in Miracles, when we are ready to return to our Father, how could that be all that bad? How can we be frightened to go to our Father's home? And why should we be frightened to go to our Father's home? So that it occurred to me that what this business of fear is all about is something that we have bought, or, if I may, a thought system that we have gotten ourselves into believing that something terrible happens to us at the end of this period of being here on this plane, when in fact that's really the waking up. And so very few of us, me included, were walking around trembling in fear with the thought that that was finality, that was the end, when indeed it's just the beginning. When somebody asks me, who hasn't had any familiarization with the Course in Miracles, what is Course in Miracles all about? My kind of stock answer is that it's about the elimination of guilt and fear. And as the Course tells us right up front, the opposite of love is fear. So it seemed to me that primarily, we had to deal with that elimination of fear before we could project that total love that we so often talk about. And that encompasses all of the fears and all of the so-called, quote, dangers that we build into our lives from the very moment we are born. And it seems that with most thought systems, that we start to get into a period and into a learning system of being God-fearing instead of God-loving. And it's occurred to me that with Mr. Barnhard, the only thing that is really terrible about what happened, and of course this will probably be a story that will be in the newspaper and on TV, and it will be built up by the media, in that what did he really lose and what did he really gain? So you see, again, we don't know, and I guess nobody knows, what steps led up to that point at age 40 where he was involved in this particular accident that he was involved in, and we don't even know if it was indeed an accident. But obviously what happened, I tend to believe that he just had his experience and accomplished what he came here to do, and he said, well, okay, I've lived that experience, and perhaps off he went to come back perhaps another time, and as Dave was talking about this morning, to learn some new experiences the next time around. And that, of course, leads me into one of the things that the Course deals with, and that is the belief in the body. This body that we have chosen to be here with is indeed a suit of clothes that we have selected to get into, and the importance that we put into the body is only as much or as little as we tend to give it. We can make it feel good, we can make it feel bad, we can make it sick, we can make it ill, we can make it do wonderful things, or we can have it do nothing. But yet, in the end, what really happens when we're ready to leave this particular experience, we leave it behind, it turns to dust, and of course we come back and choose another vehicle to have our next experience in. Now, certainly not everybody has to accept that philosophy, and it's just one that I'll share with you because I believe that that's the case. So that the body only plays its function, but what we really are here to learn, in my opinion, is how to live very peacefully in our minds. It makes no difference if you have $9 million or you have 9 cents, and it makes no difference if you're driving a red Ferrari or if you're walking, if you're not peaceful and if you don't feel calm and if you cannot extend love to your brother or sister, then what good is all those millions of dollars? The real lesson that we're here to learn and here to teach is that we must be at peace within ourselves. Because if we cannot feel peaceful and loving, then we cannot extend peace and loving. And this has occurred to me after watching so many, many people who are just getting involved in Course in Miracles, and other people who have been around it for a long time, the one thing that all of us and everyone that seems to come forward to want to join in on what we are experiencing today is that feeling of peace and that feeling of love. And we do not have to go out looking for these people. We do not have to go out searching for them, because they have already been given a roadmap which is directing them to our doors. I meet people every day that say to me, I don't know why I'm here. And I usually answer by saying, I do. It's because you're looking for a better way. And in that remark, they seem somewhat puzzled. And usually I can read their thoughts, and they're saying to themselves, well, I didn't know I was looking for a better way. And they think they just wandered in strictly by chance and strictly by accident. And I can assure you that there are no accidents. There are no accidents at all. It was no accident that I was chosen to print perhaps the greatest set of books mankind has ever known. I don't consider it an accident at all. I consider myself somewhat fortunate, but I also consider myself the person that had the experience to do it, the person that took on the chore of doing it, and the person that didn't just accept it as just another set of books that perhaps somebody would read and perhaps somebody wouldn't read, but it has become the work that I do, the work that I'm involved in, and certainly my function has been shown to me and very clearly shown that what I am to do is to be here in Detroit, or be in Santa Fe as I was last Saturday, or to be in Dallas as I was last Monday, and do my thing. And I find myself traveling usually every other weekend, going out and talking to people who are just like yourselves and just like myself, who are searching for a better way. This better way is available to us, and certainly the Course in Miracles, as was so beautifully pointed out to me 8 years ago by Judy Scutch, I remember her saying to me, and I found it at that time a little bit hard to understand what she was trying to tell me. She said that Course in Miracles is only one way. There are many ways to find God, and whichever way works is fine. But certainly this is one, and if it works for you, well, that's good. But we don't have to feel that this is the one and only, that we must walk out of here and go and start doing workbook lessons, because if that's not what's in the cards, or if there's a better way that might work for you, well, that's also fine. And all we can say is that we love you and that we will try and help as much as we can. But certainly the thing I've learned is that people can find the peace of God in very strange places. So the Course in Miracles, I feel, is only one. And of course the belief in anything will perhaps work for you, except in one thing. And that is, as I started to indicate before, the belief in death. Because when we follow a belief in death, we are, as Course in Miracles would indicate, going into what the ego, which is the negative thought system in Course in Miracles, would term as the real. Okay? And that is what we have been programmed to accept. And that is what we have been programmed to learn, in that death is what it's all about. We put in our time, we do what we have to do, we try and earn a buck and go out, and then we just die and that's the end of it. Not so. What it's all about is from the ego's point of view, the values we put on our body, the values we put on illness, the values we put on everything that is so negative, that we seem to forget, and I use the word seem, to forget that in truth, there never was really a separation from God. We are connected. We are joined. We are a part of. By the mere definition of God, we find God, and when we think about God, we think of perfection, of total, of a thought that could never be separated, of a thought that could never be fractured in any way. And in this belief system, we are constantly fighting a tug of war. We have been given free choice. The choice is ours as to which thought system we are to believe. Do we go with the ego's thought system, which are all the negative things, the death is finality, the illness, the negative thinking, the I'm not entitled to anything, I don't deserve anything, or do we go with the God thought system, which of course is that everything in life that's beautiful is ours, that we are entitled to all the abundance, to all of the beauty, to all of the love, to all of the good health, to having everything that we think we need. This is the spiritual thought system. And for the benefit of some of the people that are just kind of entering into a thought system called Course in Miracles, or those who may even be in it but haven't thought about it, we have been very blessed. God has given us that bridge that we spoke about for the benefit of the people who were with us last night. That bridge is an endless bridge, and it never, never, never is severed. It's always there. It's always available for us to use for whatever purpose we need use it. And I'm talking, of course, the bridge that I'm referring to is the Holy Spirit. This is our bridge to God. And all we need do is use this bridge, go with this bridge, and call upon it 24 hours a day if we need to. It's always there. And the bridge is not at all in any way selected for a few. It's selected for everyone. I have seen people who are at the bottom of their game. I've seen people who are at the top of their game. I've seen people who have every material thing you could possibly think they could have who are unhappy, and certainly those who are happy. I have seen very, very poor people who consider themselves poor and think they are poor, who have yet everything because they know and recognize and utilize that bridge I refer to. I want to illustrate how I use that bridge because that bridge works very well for me. And once I learn to call upon the Holy Spirit, or HS, as I sometimes call Holy Spirit, I found that putting into practice all these lovely words from the Course in Miracles was not all that difficult, and it didn't take me all that long to do it. The very first thing we must really do is just have a willingness to open our own awareness to the fact that this is a possibility that is possible. So the Course tells us we need do nothing, And certainly, it doesn't ask us to change, to switch, to convert, to throw over. It just asks us to open our own awareness to the possibilities that there must be a better way. And in seeking that better way, it was the search of that better way that enabled Helen, who was the channel for the Course in Miracles, to open her awareness and listen and take down these marvelous words that we use. So I guess what it's all about, at least for me, and what I hope to say to all of you today, is that the possibilities are absolutely endless. You can be, you can do just about anything you want to do because of one thing, and that is the fact that you are indeed a child of God. There is no task that you can't perform. There is no illness that you can't be rid of. There is no negative thought that can overwhelm you. There is no challenge that you can't overcome. And certainly, you have the ability to send out the love, the peace, the beauty, and anything else that's good in life to your brother or your sister. So when I reflect on the death of this man, he didn't really leave anything, as the article would imply, because all he did, to my way of thinking, was just return to his father's house. And all these material things don't mean a hoot. So if we recognize that, I think we can be a great deal more peaceful and certainly do what Course in Miracles has given us to do and be a lot more peaceful in the doing. Thank you.
We got a couple of minutes, and before Saul shares with you what we're going to do, it's come to me that I've thought for a long time that, to some degree, in my life at least, this is the way my world is. It's a screen, just like this. And my mind is like that projector. And I can do one of three things. I can turn the projector on and take all of the nice stuff I heard today and all the nice feelings and do nothing with it, and this is what I'll have. Okay? I can have an upside-down world. And when David and Saul and you and I get together, we're giving ourselves reinforcements that we have an opportunity where we can erase the thing. We can completely erase this mess, get it nice and clear, and then we can let the finger of God write on it, and it'll come out the way that it's supposed to. And that's what I prefer to do. I don't know about you, but that's what I want to do. I have made a total commitment to the Course in Miracles. It's my path. It's the way I want to go. It's probably not for everyone, and it doesn't really matter. No one's going to give you any static about it, and however you choose to do it, it doesn't matter. I'm just glad at this point in time we're doing it together. And from this point on, you will be a very important part of my experience, and I'm very grateful for that. And for that, I thank you very much. This is a little booklet that Saul's putting together. It seems to have not infringed on the principles of AA, and yet anyone that's in the program will recognize that quite a large degree that's what it's talking about. So do you want to relay the information on it all. And I just want you to remember one thing. I love you dearly, and I pray for you every day. And I certainly know you do the same for me. Thank you.
Before coming to Detroit, the last time I was here, I never had too many thoughts about AA or about the seeming problem that being an alcoholic presented. And then I started thinking about it, but I went over to Unity the Sunday after I was here on Saturday, and I didn't get to meet Jack Boland, but I did meet Jack Graff, and did indeed meet the girls at the bookstore who I've been have become great friends with, and they very beautifully gave me a tape on AA, and I've listened to it, and the thought occurred to me that the reason all this was coming about was that I was to do something with this new information that I got. And what happened, the material, we had done a book, which some of you may have seen, called You Know You've Got It When, which was a series of cartoons that are somewhat humorous and some more or less to the point in telling you how you know when you've got it in a cartoon fashion. And it occurred to me that in the spirit of AA, that I wanted to keep it very light and keep it so that people could laugh at these things and still get some sort of a subliminal, if that's what I can call it, message from what I was going to prepare. And I went back to the drawing boards and went to my friend Bob Fisher, who is a PhD out in where the heck is he? In the Tall Trees area in California, and right near Big Sur. And he came up with the blurbs on this, and I donated the drawings. So there's about 35 or 40 of them, and I want to share it with you and just kind of not leave today because I haven't printed the book yet. I just kind of threw this together. Spirit let me put it together in one day, and I brought it with me and said, okay, if Spirit wants me to show it, we'll show it, not knowing whether or not we'd have a projector, not knowing whether or not we'd be able to view it, but as Spirit always does with anything that I or anybody else undertakes, always provides whatever is needed to do the job, and we're always clearly guided, so here we go, and I'll kind of read the blurbs and show you the cartoon. Now, number one, as you can see, and these will all start with, you know you're getting high when you want to get bombed about as much as the Londoners did in World War II. And that's our answer, at least, to getting bombed. Number two, you know you're getting high when a white Russian is a light-skinned native of a large Eastern European country. Number three, you know you're getting high when a highball is a pitch 2 feet over your head. I just heard one man over here say, change your perception. Number four, you know you're getting high when you've been a closet drinker and you decide to come out of the closet and leave the bottle in it. In this case, bottles. Number five, you know you're getting high when you give a cocktail party and unashamedly serve all your friends Shirley Temples. This guy's face on the left really says it, doesn't it? You know you're getting high when you drive a drunken coworker home after the company Christmas party instead of vice versa. Anybody notice the typographical error in this one? You know you're getting high when you join the happy gang around the AA circle instead of the unhappy one around the bar. You know you're getting high when you actually find yourself concentrating on your work instead of on when you'll get your next drink. You know you're getting high when you go to a champagne reception and enjoy your sparkling ginger ale all night long. You know you're getting high when the sum total of your drinking habit consists of an insatiable desire for VA juice. You know you're getting high when you have a 3-mile jog during lunch hour instead of a 3-martini lunch. You know you're getting high when the only toasting you do is followed by buttering and jelly. You know you're getting high when you can look in the mirror every morning and not only see your reflection clearly, but like what you see. You know you're getting high when a triple is a 3-base hit. You know you're getting high when your liquid lunches consist of French onion soup or Boston clam chowder. Here's for the Latins in the audience. You know you're getting high when the only margarita you want to sidle up next to is that lovely young woman you met last night. You know you're getting high when you celebrate by going out to shuffle your feet instead of bend your elbows. You know you're getting high when raspberry brandy and cream de mint are the names of your eyeshadows. You know you're getting high when drying out is something you do in the sun after going skinny dipping. You know you're getting high when taking advantage of a 2-for-1 means taking your friend to a special movie promotion. You know you're getting high when the only grasshoppers in your life are the ones in your garden. You know you're getting high when you're in a traffic jam, and instead of getting off at the first exit for some drinking, you get off on thinking of making love to your husband as soon as you get home. You know you're getting high when using up your VO gives you 6 points in a Scrabble game. Here's one of my favorites. You know you're getting high when you can stand up and actually see your toes because your old beer belly has disappeared. You know you're getting high when you've got a miracle to share, and it's not about how many martinis you've downed after the sales meeting. It's about how much love you found at your AA meeting. You know you're getting high when you want to get stoned about as much as the Salem witches did. You know you're getting high when you notice your car is using less gas since you stopped taking all those side trips to the liquor stores. You know you're getting high when you order a drink on the rocks and the waitress gladly brings you your glass of iced tea. You know you're getting high when you remember what happened the night before, and the night before that, and the night before that. Here's one for Dan with the hugs. You know you're getting high when your spirits don't bubble out of an open bottle, they bubble out of your open heart. You know you're getting high when a bender is a sharp-breaking curveball. You know you're getting high when you can get into a size 10 again since you've given up 7 and 7s in favor of diet 7-ups. You know you're getting high when you stop smoking cigarettes since it just ain't no fun to smoke without the taste of a whiskey sour. You know you're getting high when you only walk into a bar because of a strong urge to play Pac-Man. You know you're getting high when you no longer think of a screwdriver as an alcoholic drink that makes you a screwy driver. You know you're getting high when your only addiction is attending AA meetings as often as you can. You've got definitely written in on top of New Year's Eve. You know you're getting high when melatonin is the time you sit back, relax, and listen to your favorite recording of Glenn Miller's orchestra. You know you're getting high when Manhattan is just a place you want to visit, not sip on. You know you're getting high when you're feeling under stress, and instead of reaching for some spirits to them, you reach for the AA book to bring your spirits up. And that's it. I hope you enjoyed it.